Okay, so welcome to the deep dive. Let's unpack this right away.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Because receiving the source material for today's deep dive, I mean, for you listening, it is basically like being handed the front cover of this fascinating, just beautifully bound hardcover book.
Right, a really premium looking book.
Exactly. But then you crack the spine and you realize there are absolutely no pages inside.
None at all.
You are just staring at the blank inside of the cardboard.
It's completely empty.
It really is. You asked us to look at a highly specific, custom-tailored source today. And usually that means we're preparing to hack our way through a dense forest of data.
Oh, yeah. Usually it's just spreadsheets and reports.
Right. We expect to untangle industry jargon, cross-reference statistics, and pull out actionable insights for you. But today, well, we were basically staring at an informational vacuum.
A total void.
Yeah, we have the cover, we have a title gleaming in bold letters, and we have absolutely nothing else.
Which, you know, it forces a complete methodological shift in how we analyze the material.
Oh, for sure.
Because when you are handed a mountain of data, the intellectual challenge is its reduction. You have to synthesize and summarize.
You're stripping away the noise.
Exactly. You identify the core arguments while stripping away that noise. But when you are handed what we have today, which is just a stark, absolute minimum of text, the challenge becomes entirely structural.
Because there's nothing to actually reduce.
Right. We cannot analyze the contents of the container because, well, there are no contents.
Yeah.
So instead, we are forced to analyze the shape of the container itself. We really have to look at the exact architecture of the phrasing and ask why the specific linguistic container was placed in front of you.
And I want to be perfectly transparent with you, the listener, about the exact dimensions of this container we are talking about.
It's remarkably small.
It is so small. The source material you provided for us to analyze consists entirely, and I mean exclusively, of a single 12-word phrase.
12 words. That's it.
That's the whole thing. I'm going to read the entire document to you right now. Here it is. Quote, excerpts from Understanding the Power of Compound Interest. Understanding the Power of Compound Interest, unquote.
And that's all of it.
That is the beginning, the middle, and the end of the text. There is no paragraph explaining the underlying math at all.
No context whatsoever.
None. There is no historical context regarding financial systems. There isn't even a period at the end of the sentence.
Just a looping phrase.
Yeah, it's just a looping, repetitive string of words.
But from a purely analytical standpoint, I mean, that blankness is a profound mechanism.
Really? How so?
Well, when you strip away the chapters, the data tables, the author's arguments, and all the supporting evidence, you are left with the raw architecture of intent.
Okay, the intent.
Yeah. A title is never a neutral entity. It is a highly engineered piece of language designed to manipulate your attention.
You know? Right. It's doing a specific job.
Exactly. It's there to frame your expectations and establish a specific power dynamic between the author and the reader.
I see what you mean.
And because we have no body text to distract us, we can actually put this title under a microscope. We can dissect exactly how it is attempting to operate on your psychology.
I like that approach, because when I look at the intentional framing of this text, it immediately strikes me as, well, a deliberate departure from traditional academic structures.
Oh, completely.
Like, think about all the ways an author could have titled a piece of writing about a mathematical or financial concept.
They usually go for dry and descriptive.
Exactly. They could have gone with something purely descriptive, like an introduction to compound interest.
Or something operational.
Right, like the mathematics of interest accrual.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, the source explicitly uses the phrase, understanding the power.
It's very dramatic.
It is. So what does this all mean? The source frames this not just as a financial mechanism, not just a formula on a whiteboard, but as a quote-unquote power.
Yeah, it elevates it.
It almost sounds like a superhero origin story, you know?
Right.
Or some untamed force of nature that you're being invited to harness.
Well, let's isolate that word for a second. Power.
Okay, let's dig into it.
In a physics context, power is simply the rate at which work is done, or energy is transferred.
Very clinical.
Right. And in a social context, power is the capacity to direct the behavior of others or the course of events.
Which is a bit more intimidating.
Exactly. But when applied to a financial concept like compound interest, the word takes on a very specific psychological function.
How so?
Well, abstract mathematical concepts are generally categorized by the human brain as inert, They just exist on a page.
They don't jump out at you.
Right. They do not pose an immediate threat, nor do they offer an immediate biological reward.
So we just ignore them.
Yes. The brain naturally conserves energy by ignoring them. But by injecting the word power, the author is artificially increasing the kinetic energy of the topic.
Oh, wow. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah. They are forcing your brain to recategorize the concept from inner abstraction to active environmental force.
That makes a lot of sense, but I have to push back on that framing just a little bit.
Okay, go ahead.
Doesn't utilizing the word power in this context cross the line into outright manipulation?
It certainly flirts with it.
I mean, if I am writing an objective textbook on physics, I don't title a chapter Understanding the Power of Gravity unless I am trying to sell you an anti-gravity device.
That's a very fair point.
Right. It feels less like an objective description of a mathematical reality and more like a sales pitch.
It is definitely leveraging a specific desire.
It leverages this very seductive idea that you are about to be granted a secret weapon. It just makes me wonder if the reader is actually being educated here or if they're just being marketed to.
And see, the tension between education and marketing is exactly what makes this specific word choice so effective.
You think it's intentional?
Absolutely. You are looking at the vernacular of persuasion. However, persuasion isn't inherently devoid of educational value, you know?
I guess that's true. Sometimes you have to sell the lesson.
Often, it is a prerequisite for it. To teach someone a complex, slow-acting mechanism like compound interest, you first have to overcome their temporal discounting.
Wait, temporal discounting? Unpack that for a second.
Oh, sure. It's the human tendency to value immediate rewards over future, larger rewards.
Like choosing a donut now instead of health later.
Exactly. So the word power acts as a cognitive bridge. It promises an outsized, future reward-like leverage, control, advantage in exchange for the immediate cognitive labor required to learn the concept.
Okay, I see. It's the carrot on the stick.
Right. A passive title, like The History of Interest, implies something you merely observe.
Which is boring.
Exactly. But the power implies something that has agency. It's something that acts upon the world, and crucially, something you can wield if you possess the right knowledge.
Okay, and that concept of cognitive labor brings us directly to the first word of the phrase, understanding.
A very deliberate choice.
Yeah, because the author doesn't say using the power or harnessing the power. They specifically emphasize understanding.
They want you to do the mental work first.
Right. And when I look at that word, it immediately makes me think of the illusion of explanatory depth.
Oh, that's a perfect connection to make here.
You know that psychological phenomenon where we all walk around assuming we know how a zipper works?
Right, or how a toilet flushes.
Exactly. We think we know right up until the moment someone hands us a piece of paper and asks us to draw the actual mechanical schematic.
And then everything falls apart.
It really does. Then we realize we only know what a zipper is, but we have absolutely no idea how it actually functions.
We mistake familiarity for comprehension.
Yes. And by leading with the word understanding, this title seems to be poking at that exact cognitive blind spot.
I'd say the illusion of explanatory depth is the precise vulnerability this title is targeting.
So it's calling us out.
Basically, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the pedagogical stance the author is taking by prioritizing that specific word.
Okay.
You only need to guide someone toward understanding when there is a recognized deficit in their current knowledge. Or, you know, when the subject is heavily shrouded in misconception. If a concept is intuitively obvious, an author doesn't explicitly demand that you understand it.
Yeah, that makes sense. You don't read a manual titled Understanding How to Drink Water.
Exactly. You just drink it. So by placing understanding at the very front of the phrase, the source text is quietly but firmly establishing a hierarchy.
A hierarchy between the author and the reader.
Yes. It is telling the reader, you do not currently grasp the magnitude or the mechanics of this phenomenon.
You think you do, but you don't.
Precisely. You likely operate under the illusion that you do, but you do not.
It establishes a baseline of humility for the reader, which is interesting. But, I don't know, it almost borders on condescending.
It definitely has an authoritative edge to it.
Yeah, it's like saying, before you can wear the superhero cape we just talked about, mm-hmm. before you can wield this incredible power, you have to sit down and recognize your own ignorance.
You have to earn it.
Right. But there is a really fascinating juxtaposition happening between those two words when you put them together.
How do you mean?
Well, understanding is an internal, cognitive, largely invisible process.
Okay.
But power is an external, impactful, highly visible force.
Oh, that's a great point.
So the title is essentially arguing that cognitive clarity is the direct, non-negotiable prerequisite to wielding real-world influence.
It is codifying the old adage that knowledge is power, but it is applying it to a highly specific mathematical mechanism.
Yeah.
And it's really vital to recognize the causality implied here. The title suggests a linear progression.
Right. Step one and then step two.
First, internal comprehension, then external application. It rejects the idea of accidental success.
You can't just stumble into being good at this.
Exactly. You cannot stumble into wielding the power of compound interest effectively. It must be an intentional act born of deep comprehension.
So it's an initiation.
It is. This framing elevates the act of reading from a simple absorption of facts to a necessary initiation ritual.
Which brings us to the actual subject of this initiation ritual. We've deconstructed the psychological hook, the promise of power, and the demand for humility.
We've covered the setup.
Now we have to look at what the source explicitly identifies as the object of all this intellectual labor, which is compound interest.
The core mechanism itself.
Exactly. We have the framing, and now we have the subject.
We have the destination that the incredibly bright, demanding signpost is pointing toward.
Right. But here's where the architecture of this source material gets genuinely infuriating.
Because of the cutoff.
Yes.
Yeah.
We are given the subject compound interest. We are told it is a formidable power. We are told we are severely lacking in our understanding of it.
The buildup is massive.
And then just absolute silence. The excerpt just ends.
It drops off a cliff.
It really does. It gives us the menu, promises us the greatest meal of our lives, and then it locks the kitchen doors.
That's a great way to put it.
I genuinely feel cheated by the text. I mean, why structure an excerpt this way? Is it a mistake? Or is it a deliberate test of the reader's patience?
Well, if we assume intentionality behind this specific extraction, that the curator of your source material deliberately provided only this phrase, then we are looking at a masterclass in exposing the boundaries of information.
Explain that a bit more. What do you mean by boundaries?
Based strictly on the text provided, the actual mechanics, the mathematical formulas of exponential growth, the historical origins of banking, and the tangible financial implications of compounding returns are entirely omitted.
They're just not there.
Right. They exist solely as an implication, a kind of shadow cast by the title. What this forces us to examine is how our brains process incomplete information.
Ah, I see. It forces us to look at how we consume media on a daily basis.
Which is largely superficial.
Yeah, we live in an era of infinite scrolling, which is characterized by extreme information density and extremely low attention span.
We are bombarded constantly.
We really are. Titles, headers, subject lines. I know I am guilty of reading a compelling headline. Something like, new study shows olive oil reverses aging.
Oh, we all do that.
Right. I absorb the premise. And subconsciously, I convince myself that I now possess that knowledge.
You feel informed without doing the work.
Exactly. I never read the methodology. I never look at the sample size to see if it was just like tame mice in a lab.
You skip the actual science.
I just internalize the headline as a fully formed fact and move on with my day.
And you are describing the exact cognitive trap this source material exposes.
Because holding up a mirror.
Very much so. We frequently absorb the premise of a text without ever demanding the supporting evidence. We mistake the map for the territory.
And that's a profound way to look at it.
This specific text, by being ruthlessly stripped of all its supporting body paragraphs, it forces us to confront that habit.
Because it doesn't give us the option to read the body, even if we wanted to.
Precisely. It completely severs the premise from the reality. It practically holds up a mirror and demands that you acknowledge the gap in your own knowledge.
It's confronting us.
It asks the reader, I gave you the buzzwords. I gave you power and compound interest. Do you feel informed?
Because logically, you shouldn't.
Exactly. You have zero new functional data.
But the way it holds up that mirror is incredibly bizarre. I mean, the text isn't just a single title. It's a tautology.
Yes, the repetition is very striking.
It explicitly says, quote, excerpts from Understanding the Power of Compound Interest. Understanding the Power of Compound Interest.
It loops back on itself.
It promises an excerpt from a larger work, and the excerpt it provided is literally just the title of the work repeated back at us.
It is quite jarring.
It's like a linguistic snake eating its own tail.
If you tell me you are going to show me a clip from a movie, and then you just hand me a piece of paper with the movie's title written on it, I'm going to feel like I'm the butt of a joke.
You'd feel mocked. Yeah. So what is the functional purpose of this repetition? Why not just say the title once and be done with it?
Well, in classical information theory, redundancy is introduced into a system to ensure that a signal survives interference or noise.
Like static on a radio.
Exactly. If I'm communicating with you over a static-filled radio channel, I will repeat the coordinates multiple times to ensure you receive the core data.
Okay, that makes sense for a noisy environment.
However, in this text, there is no noise. The channel is perfectly clear. It's just black text on a white page.
So why repeat it?
Because the repetition serves a different psychological function. It serves as isolation.
Isolation.
Yes. By recursively pointing back to its own title, the text creates a closed cognitive loop.
A loop that traps your attention.
Right. It tells the reader that the most critical foundational piece of data to extract from this entire subject is not the math itself, but the initial premise.
It's arguing that recognizing the importance of the concept is actually more vital than knowing the formula.
That's the core message, yes.
It's basically saying, if you remember nothing else, remember that this is powerful and you need to understand it.
Precisely. It distills the entire purpose of engaging with the subject into a single, inescapable directive.
And the repetition just hammers it home.
It does. And the absence of the explanatory information creates an informational vacuum. And human curiosity, as we know, is inherently abhorrent of a vacuum.
We want to fill in the blanks.
We have to. If the text had simply laid out the mathematical formula for calculating compound interest, like showing the principal amount multiplied by the interest rate over time, the brain might categorize it as standard, somewhat tedious math and just move on.
We'd be bored.
We would. But by withholding the mechanics and only providing the promise of power, it turns the reader into an active seeker of knowledge rather than a passive recipient.
It manufactures desire through scarcity.
That is exactly what it does.
It's the ultimate cliffhanger. And it works because it relies on the friction between what we are promised and what we are given.
It's a very clever structural trick.
So how do we pull this all together for you, the listener? I mean, we have taken a 12-word phrase and spun a massive web of linguistic, psychological, and structural analysis out of it.
We've covered a lot of ground from a very small starting point.
What is the core takeaway from this incredibly unique deep dive? To me, it seems the primary lesson is about recognizing the nature of the signpost.
I agree completely. The source material functions entirely as an indicator of direction, not as a destination itself.
It's pointing to something bigger.
It points toward a highly significant concept. It deliberately frames that concept as a potent elemental force requiring deep cognitive engagement.
Day-to-day.
And then it deliberately steps out of the way, leaving the actual mechanics completely unstated.
And the reason you should care about such a brief, enigmatic excerpt, why we spent this whole time talking about it, is that this structure mimics the modern information landscape perfectly.
It really is a microcosm of how we consume data today.
Recognizing the difference between a compelling premise, you know, the gleaming title on the cover, and actionable mechanistic knowledge, the missing pages, is an essential survival skill in a world of information overload.
It's how you protect your attention.
Exactly. It is how you determine when you are just coasting on the illusion of explanatory depth, and when you actually need to stop scrolling, roll up your sleeves, and dig into the methodology.
It is the critical difference between knowing the name of a complex tool and possessing the actual skill required to use it to build something of value.
Because they are not the same thing at all.
Not at all. A label is not a definition, and a title is not an education.
Exactly. So I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. Something to take with you after this deep dive concludes.
Something to reflect on.
Think about your own media consumption. Think about how often in your daily life you are presented with incredibly compelling titles, buzzwords, or pitches that promise deep power or profound insight.
We see them every single day.
We do.
Yeah.
But they completely lack the actual substance to back it up. We are basically surrounded by empty covers.
They offer the illusion of clarity while fundamentally withholding the means of execution.
And since this particular source material gave you the door, gave you the glowing sign pointing toward compound interest, but absolutely refused to hand you the key, well, what hidden mechanics of this specific power are out there, waiting in the dark for you to discover on your own?
You have to go find out.
The cover has done its job. It got your attention. It proved you don't know as much as you thought you did. Now the rest of those blank pages are yours to fill.